Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cause podcast.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Macko and Cause podcast. I'm Matt Cause. That's Bob Mackowitz. Bob, you don't look a day older. Podcast number 173.
Matthew, the bicentennial.
Oh yeah, that is what this is.
We are the Screaming Eagle of Freedom.
Yeah. Oh, I like what you did there.
Yeah. This is exciting. We made it to 200. I remember when we first started, it was unclear how it was going to go. I guess that's true of everything that just starts. But yeah, this has been fun, man. I have the best time doing this. We never get to see each other anymore because, well, COVID for one. But we have different lives now. But we work together so closely for so many years that I tell people all the time, this is for me and Matt, like going to the park and throwing the ball around.
That's exactly what it is. A perfect way to put it.
It's like playing Frisbee with your best buddy on a holiday. So shall we dive right into it? We asked for listener questions. I'm assuming we got some.
Yeah, we got some. We sort of threw it out a little bit late, but we do have some. But before anything else, I need to say, my favorite thing about my Instagram account is the Parkdale Panther response to any of my Instagrams.
I have put you in my sights, that's for sure. I don't remember exactly what I said. You send out these pictures. They're, you know, usually some kind of obnoxious picture of wine or food. And then you write something underneath and it's even more obnoxious, usually a lot more. And sometimes I just go, I can't let this slide. So I send a note. And it's always some sarcastic remark about you being relatable.
Yes. Well, the one was about German Riesling, and I'm like, don't fear sweetness. Residual sugar is good. Residual sugar with a bad winemaker is bad. And you said, thank Matt, good job overcoming your fears. And I'm like, thank you, Bob. It's a personal journey. Healing is not a linear path. And then I did another one about a different wine, and you said relatable.
Ooh, relatable. Instagram is a gigantic repository of self-help advice. Mm-hmm. It's basically like how to be emotionally healthy and how to make your ass look great. That's about 70% of Instagram.
You're so right. There is, and I've talked to people that do this on a regular basis. And they say, you know, you twist your leg, you do a bit of a lift, you get it on an angle, and suddenly everything can look great. It's creepy to look at someone where you know what they really look like and you see that pic. I don't get Instagram. I only use it for wine stuff and to push my wine podcast. That's basically it.
Matt, I'm not emotionally healthy, so I can't show that. And my ass isn't particularly good, so I can't show that. I have no purpose on Instagram.
I'm kind of the same way. But of course, you do keep the gram going on the Macko and Cause page.
That's true. I am the social media director of the program. You know, do you want to get right into the stuff, or do you? Let's get right into the stuff, and then I want to circle back on what I did when I first woke up this morning.
Okay. Ooh, God, that's a tease.
We can come back to that. How about some listener questions?
All right, Chelsea Darlington.
You don't have this in front of you, do you?
No, I'm about to read them. Chelsea Darlington, tons of people have picked up so many amazing, weird, random hobbies this past year during quarantine/work from home. Did you guys pick up a new hobby? And if not, is there one you wish you did?
Is anger a hobby?
Bob, for you, that's a lifestyle. That's not a hobby.
Okay, so then I'll come. You go first. I've actually got one. You go first.
Okay, well, here's my answer. I'm kind of hoping the COVID and quarantine lasts for another 18 months because I haven't picked up anything and I feel shame about that. So I feel like I really need another year or so I can get my shit together and learn to play guitar.
Well, one of my favorite comments through the whole COVID saga was Tom Power on CBC had a show called Where You At or something like that. And he was basically just doing double enders with celebrities for CBC. And Catherine Reitman from Working Moms was on. And Power asks her, like, the standard question at the time, have you learned to bake bread? And she kind of looked at him and said, I got kids. Like, I don't have fucking time to like learn how to bake bread. I'm trying to keep the house afloat, you know? And I kind of love that. There was like this presupposition that now everyone was going to become Shakespeare because they couldn't leave the house.
Yeah.
They're going to write 3 novels and everybody's going to, you know, learn how to do Pilates at home from YouTube. And everybody just like watched a lot of Netflix, which is exactly what you'd think humanity would do when quarantined.
Yeah, well, there's all these commercials, and the thing is, the bread thing was real, at least for a while. Like yeast, you know, and when I think of yeast, I think of wine, shockingly enough. But like certain types of yeast were sold out everywhere in the city as people were learning to bake bread. And you know, you know what it is? It's stupid Instagram and social media. And someone's like, hey, look, I picked up the guitar, or I'm trying to learn a language, and I'm like, fuck you. I'm rewatching 30 Rock for the 4th time. Like, yes, that's why, Bob, I need COVID to last for many more years, so at least when it ends, I can say I did this.
You haven't done enough self-improvement, so you need the Western, well, in fact, the whole world to stay in its coma for a little while longer so that you can get better.
Until I learn how to conjugate Portuguese verbs, everyone, stay inside.
I did start to pick up a new skill. I'm not sure it's COVID-related as much as it is time-of-life related, though. I decided I wanted to get back to playing music again.
Yeah.
And I strum the guitar a little bit, but I'm not really very good. Like, I'm a functional guitar player at best. And to go back and relearn the trumpet, like, I spent most of my youth practicing to be a professional trumpet player, but I haven't really played in about 25 years. And so I don't really want to go through that again. It's a lot of work. And it's not like I can sit around the house playing trumpet and not irritate anybody. So you know what I did? My daughter brought home a pair of drumsticks because in school they're so cheap now. Rather than giving them instruments, they give the kids drumsticks and say, now go tap rhythms. So she brought the sticks home and I just started goofing around on pillows and, you know, overturned Tupperwares and stuff like I did when I was 9-10 years old. And I really started to enjoy it. So I started to do different rudiments that I had learned over the years. And all of a sudden now I'm like, wait a minute, I know what instrument I want to learn. I want to learn the drums. This is great. Have you ever sat at a drum kit and just played a simple beat, Matt?
No.
It is so meditative. It is so beautiful. I call myself One Beat Pete because I have one beat. I have one beat. I can play it. And it goes in every song. I'm One Beat Pete. But I thought, you know, it's funny because Georgie, too, got himself a drum kit. He's down in L.A. and he doesn't have family, kids, any of that stuff, plus tons of disposable income. So he's like, yeah, I'll learn to drum. So he bought himself a kit. And he was telling me you can get these electronic kits now so that basically they're just pads and you hook yourself up to the headphones. So it's not even like the whole house has to hear. You're just hitting pads. It's not particularly loud. So my goal is to save up cash and get myself a drum kit and learn to drum and join a punk band with a couple of my friends. I've been writing punk tunes.
Really? Do you have any song titles?
I've got one called Send More Cops.
Is that the romantic song?
Yeah. Yeah. I've got a few song titles. I'm not prepared to say them on the air though. Yeah, I don't know. I kind of feel like I've got also a punk resurgence in my life. I also think that happens when a certain amount of gray kicks in. You go into a second adolescence because you see the end is coming. So you're like, I better go back and listen to all my old, Cramps records. This, you can't relate to this. Is this you telling me relatable?
No, I think the music thing's probably more relatable than some of the wine stuff I do. I just had this image, Bob, if you now... you using this skill and you becoming a busker, you know, like the drumsticks and the plastic, a bucket, and you're on Young and Dundas Square.
You know, I used to busk when I was
really,
when I was in university, I would go, I'd grab my case and my horn and I'd go down to the boardwalk and I'd play and I'd make enough money to get beer. And then I'd go drink. Yeah.
That would have been a fun night.
It was a great way to sort of be young because you got nowhere to go anyway. And I'm just playing for a couple hours while I'm out there. Now, it's hard to busk when you play trumpet by yourself.
Yeah.
It's not exactly a sing-along kind of instrument.
No.
But, I would get a couple people together. Oh, my dog's going to start barking soon. So we'll see how this goes. She's looking at me like, there we go. So if it's not the dog, I may have to go up to my office.
Well, the dog is really one of your new hobbies this year.
Well, that's true. So hang on a second. Like, should I go upstairs or should we just see how disruptive the dog's going to be?
Give it a, you know what? If you want to go upstairs, I'll give a shout out to our sponsor.
Yeah. You know what? You shout out Jeff Paul, because honestly, like, this is an indication of how well our training has gone.
You beat me to the joke. All right. I'll see you in a second. So, yes, this is our 200th episode of Macko and Cause, and our title sponsor is our lawyer, Jeff Pollock. And at some point, you hear this all the time, but it is true. At some point, you're going to need legal help, legal advice, legal something. So you might as well get a good lawyer. You might as well get a lawyer who's good at their job and you can trust, and not some giant firm. You know, you want a small firm where you're going to have like Aaron Brockovich there fighting for you. All right, there might not be Aaron Brockovich, but Jeff's wife, Eugenia, is a great accountant. Anyway, if you need a lawyer, jeffpollock.com, that's Jeff with a G, jeffpollock.com. The phone number is 416-777-0088, 416-777-0088. Yep, it sounds like the number you call when you order a pizza, but this time you're getting a hot steaming box of law. Are you back, Bob?
Yeah, I'm back. I'm back in time for the hot steaming box.
There you go.
Very nice. I don't know what the hell you've been saying, but what the hell was that?
I thought that was the name of one of your punk songs, Hot Steaming Box, or Steaming Hot a Box or something.
Could be. We're a pretty political band, but we'll see. You know, we could have some fun tunes too. Hey, let's talk a little bit about the Leafs before we get back into listener questions, because I want to throw out a hot take.
Sure.
I think this goaltending situation might be, they might get out of okay, but it also might be the biggest crisis of Dubas's career. And I don't think people are talking enough about it. They are a team that is poised to win now. And depending on how Freddie Anderson is, and depending on how Jack Campbell is in terms of their health, they might be stuck with a third string goalie if they don't do something at the trade deadline. In which case, they're almost guaranteed to be a first round out. And if they're a first round out because of goaltending and no moves were made either in the offseason, during the season, or at the trade deadline, it's going to be pretty hard to justify keeping the GM around. And I think, I'm amazed, knowing hockey the way we all do in this city, that people aren't, like, people are as upset about getting a good left winger as they are about having a functional goalie. I think this is Dubas's biggest crisis.
The pushback is that the defense has been really good. Like, my pushback is I think they're winning in the first round, even with average goaltending, because of the talent and just because I think the defense is better. And in all these games that they've been losing lately, it's not been the defense. And I mean, it has been part of the goaltending. And now listen, I'll also say this. Now I'm having two conversations at once. I apologize. The goaltending is the biggest issue, but it's the health of the goalies. If they're healthy with this defense, my bigger concern is that the offense over the last 11 games has scored, I think, 29 goals. But yeah, at the deadline, if there's a chance for a goalie upgrade versus a winger upgrade, I'm going goalie over winger.
But here's the thing, Matt, and I'm going to make a comparison that's not entirely fair, but it's sort of fair given the nature of the position. If you were a really good NFL team and you couldn't trust the health of your top two quarterbacks, how good would you feel about going into the playoffs with your third string quarterback?
You would feel horrible.
So I think we should feel horrible about the prospect of a Hutchinson or a Vishy Veshkolovsky. What's the new guy's name? Vichyssoise?
Yeah, it's Vichy. Ooh, Vichyssoise. My favorite soup.
Cool. Yeah. That was for you, Matt.
Thank you.
If the trade deadline goes by and they don't address this, and it turns out that Jack Campbell's chronic problems with getting injured on a dime continue, and if Freddie Anderson is worse off, and he might not be, who knows? There's always this cloak of intrigue around, you know, injuries in the NHL. But I didn't even trust him when I thought he was healthy. This, to me, could be the greatest flat tire a Toronto team has laid in a long time. If they go into the first round and they get shelled, like last night, you know, I can sum it up this way. So when Edmonton scores in overtime, did you see the look on Matthews' face?
He wasn't thrilled because he thought he'd scored at the other end on Mike Smith.
But I looked at the, and this was my interpretation. I don't know if you really thought this, but I looked at it and I was like, first shot. Didn't even give us a chance.
Yeah.
You know?
No, it's true.
We were never going to win this game with that guy in net. Like they looked like they probably thought they had 30 seconds to close the deal. Cause as soon as this guy saw a shot, it would be over. And that's what happened.
To be fair, on the other side, when they swept Edmonton the three games, both Hutchison and Campbell got shutouts. But the bigger picture, Bob, is I agree with you. You know, you look at the win against Ottawa, and Jack Campbell was muffling around with the puck, but they found a way to win. I just, you know, I look at that game against Edmonton, and Toronto played a good game, and I think why there might not be more focus on Dubas on, hey, asshole, fix the goalie, is that Galchenyuk's looked good, Simmons looked good, Thornton and re-signing Spezza, like a lot of the small moves made have, at least in the short term, have worked out. And I think that is protecting Dubas from the fact that the goaltending situation is in flux.
If you're an NFL GM, and you put together a great crew of wide receivers and you find a gem of a tight end, you know, at the bottom of the draft, maybe you make a couple nice free agent signings to bolster your linebacking crew, and you don't fix your quarterback problem and you lose, people are like, why the hell didn't you fix your quarterback problem? It's the most important thing. My take on it is this. Everything you say is absolutely true. And to try and pin this on Dubas isn't the most important part of the take. The most important part of the take is the level of crisis, which I think, oddly for Toronto, I think people are a little cash about it. You're looking at a very possible scenario where you're going into the NHL playoffs with Michael Hutchison as your number one.
Ooh. Well, you know, put it like that, Bob. I mean,
well, but that's it. Like, that's what I'm saying is, like, yeah, there is non-zero chance that that's going to happen.
Just the idea of going in, I mean, put it this way. If Michael Hutchison is starting game one of the playoffs, then that is a failure. That's a failure on the part of Kyle Dubas.
Do you remember the Corey Crawford, Scott Darling year? And Crawford was scuffling in the first round. They brought in Darling and, you know, he helped him get through a couple of games. And then Crawford got back on track and the Hawks took off. Like, if that happened with Campbell and Freddie Anderson, people would be like, good thing we had a decent backup. That's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about the number one and the number two might not be fit to even play.
Yeah.
Again, this could be nothing. This could be a tempest in a teacup that I'm just whipping up because I'm Torontonian and I love drama. But it seems like we're acting like pigeons at the side of the highway. Yo, there's an 18-wheeler coming. Don't be so cash.
Because you picked a 16-wheeler or a 20-wheeler. Did you have to go 18?
Yeah, the 18-wheeler was on purpose.
You know what frustrates me? Sorry?
No, I was going to say, what frustrates you? And then we'll come back to it.
What frustrates me is just what we haven't seen very often, especially with Freddie, where he's the better goalie. Like, mm-hmm, when you look at a lot of the losses in the last 3 weeks, it's always the Leafs played really well. They outshot, they outpossessed the other team, but the other team just got the goalie work that Toronto didn't get. It's like everything else is working but that. Like, that's the frustrations. Oh, well, you know, Thatcher Demko was great. Oh, Thomas Rittich was great. Oh, Connor Hellebuck was great. It's never Freddie Anderson was great. It was always Freddie Anderson. Yeah, he was pretty good.
And in a weird way, that's the best case scenario based on current examples for the Toronto Maple Leafs and the playoffs. That Freddie, who's inconsistent and doesn't really seem to outplay the other guy at the other end of the rink very often, he's your best option. Mm-hmm. And he might not even be available based on what's happening, which we don't know about again. I'm maybe making stuff up, but maybe it's COVID and all the weird dreams I'm having, but I just keep seeing a situation where the Leafs have the best team they've had since Pat Quinn, Pat Burns, whatever. Certainly in a long, long, long time. And they got nothing between the pipes. And that's trouble. By the way, the thing I was going to mention is it's not like there's an easy fix. Like, what do you do? Bring in Jonathan Bernier, Jonathan Quick, Ryan Miller? You know, do you try and figure out how to pry a goalie away from Columbus? Do you make a bigger deal for Darcy Kemper? And he, I think his contract is like $4.5 million. So that's not easy. And he's hurt right now. Like, it's not like there's an easy deal. And does Dubas have the guts to pull the trigger? It's a bunch of stinky options that are hard to manage. This is a, Matt, this is a pickle.
It is.
Listen. Pickle.
Cam, watch the language, Bob. I think I'm getting real briny talk.
I haven't used that. We're in a real pickle.
Golly gee willikers.
I will say Muzzin and Hall look good.
Say that again?
Muzzin and Hall look good.
They did. Muzzin looked great last night. Hall looked great. I mean, the real stinky part is they lose, and they Draisaitl and McDavid have like 5 total shots and only and just like 1 assist. You know, they didn't do very much. It was the secondary scoring that that got it done for Edmonton. Listen, we're going to find out a lot more. Jack Campbell, Sheldon Keefe said he's good to go on Wednesday against the Jets. And then it's, I think, the Jets again and then Calgary. It's like 3 games over the next like 5 days. So, I mean, the best case scenario is they're being overly cautious with Campbell and Freddie. And, you know, and they know they can do that now. That's the best case. The worst case, Bob, as you said, is it's game one and Hutchison is in net.
It's amazing that they played Edmonton and they're 6-2-1 against them with a +12 goal differential. Like, that was the last game they played against them last night for the season. And it really goes to show how Muzzin and Hall can shut down one line, and that makes you feel awesome. I know, like, the super deep teams, they're going to be hard. A Tampa Bay, that's going to be hard. They're hard for anybody, obviously. But the reason I mention all that is they're in a really good position to go pretty far. They've got a lot of weapons, and they've got a legitimate shutdown pair now, which in the playoffs, we know how important that is. Those guys can be playing 27 minutes a night. And you see, like, they've had a lot of success against Edmonton because Edmonton's a one-line team. They are in a great position, and you would just hate for shitty goaltending to bring them down after all the growing pains. And Matthews is all of a sudden a legitimate heart candidate. He's not going to win, but he's, you know, he's in that echelon now. Marner looks amazing. So many good things have happened. Don't let it happen, Matt.
What you don't want, Bob, what you don't want is, we're seeing in a playoff game where the story is, wow, the Leafs have been dominating, but they only lead 1-0. And then with a minute left, some short side goal that should have been saved isn't saved. It's 1-1. Team gets deflated. Now what?
Well, you know when you saw that? Last night.
Yeah.
Last night. You know, the Archibald goal, you know, it wasn't a gimme. Like, it wasn't like he let in a muffin, but you knew he wasn't going to make that save on the breakaway. You just knew he wasn't going to make the save. And in the playoffs, you got to make the save.
Yeah, you do. And all right, we'll see.
We'll see. Listener questions, Matt.
Listener questions. All right, I'm just loading it back up because I try not to keep my internet going when I got Skype going. So I work off my phone, and I'm not a very good work off my phone. Oh, just a shout out, Thomas Chappelle. You'll like this, Bob. He wrote in, I left work to raise 3 kids, totally struggling and losing my shit for reals. But you guys at 9 a.m. really saved me. Sports were not a big part of my life, but I listened just to hear chemistry. Sincere thank you for the work you put into the pod. So the Twitter account, just a name. But, that made me feel nice like that, you know, that you and I, and it's not we can make someone's life, turn someone's life around. But if we can add a little dollop of joy, that makes me feel great.
That is a really nice comment. And probably one of the nicest things about radio and audio as compared to TV or film is, I don't know what it is, but you tend to form more deeper connections with people who are listening, and you tend to have a more satisfying relationship with, like, you build a community as opposed to just having a bunch of listeners. Yes. I love that about this medium. And I always feel like when people write that if we met in a bar and we were just hanging out, we would probably have a 45-minute chat that would be fun. Because if you like the pod, it's probably because you would get along with me and Matt, since there's no allusions to what the show is. It's just me and Matt.
Yeah, it's the intimate nature of it. It's the connection. And we all have it. Like, I have I had my favorite radio shows growing up. I have my favorite podcast now. You know, I could tell you more about some of my favorite podcast hosts than I could about some of my own friends or family, because there is that intimate relationship. And the best hosts, the best people, they're honest. You know, they give you most of who they are. So I've always loved that connection. It's like Overdrive. When they have guests on, I'm like, eh, all right. But when it's them with Ray Ferraro, I'm like, okay, I'm fully committed to it. It's like my favorite radio shows. I just want the host and whoever's around the show talking. I often cases, I don't really care as much about the guests.
It's funny, when we used to have guests on, you and I, and we would get people on that either you or I really admired, you could always tell. When we had like Kevin Blackstone, I'd always try to come up with a brilliant question. So he would go, that's a brilliant question. Yeah. And whenever we'd have Dave Damashek on, you'd always be like, let's talk about fruit. Oh, man, I'm just as fun and out of the park as you are.
That's true.
Right? You always wanted to, like, buddy up with your funny friends. And I always wanted to, like, write an A-plus paper for my smart guests.
It's 100%. Yeah. Oh, no, we're totally on brand. By the way, Sarah Spain will be joining me on Friday. And will there be conversations about the A-team? Probably.
I love that. She was really good. I feel like we did a good job. I feel like we did a good job anticipating what the next wave of interesting sports personalities was going to be. When we really tried, you and I were interested in analytics, but as much as we were interested in the study of numbers, we were almost more interested in the people who are behind it. And
yes.
And so we had a chance to really, like, you know, we had Steve Dangle on before anybody else. You know, just things like that, you know. I was always
Tyler Dello as well.
Tyler Dello. It's funny. We either found people who were trying to figure out how to get into media and they were using the internet, or how to get into management and they were using the internet. And we were attracted to both of those. Which goes back to the comment you made from Thomas Chappelle just about how that was also part of our community, was people who maybe had a passion for the subject, but didn't fit in a traditional way. You and I always gravitated towards that.
Yeah, I think one of the reasons why we're friends and why we're doing this, because we both, I forget, you probably said it or someone else, we're sports geeks who come from an arts background.
Yeah, if I never said it, if I didn't say it, I certainly agree with it. When I'm hanging out with my arts friends, they think I'm a jock. And when I'm hanging out with my sports guys, they think I'm Shakespeare. You know, I don't know that you and I fit easily into either world. And so we had to create our own where everything was equal.
Yeah. Nah, it's been a while since someone looked at me and said jock. But yeah, you know, you want to be able to combine them. It's like I was the only guy in my, when I was in theater during rehearsals wearing a Phil Simms jersey. No one else had a Phil Simms jersey on back then.
We were known when I was in Glue Leg as the Bases Are Loaded horns. Because you have to name your horn section, of course, because I remember one time I shut down practice because the Jays had loaded the bases and I wanted to see what was going to happen.
Oh, that's a great horn name. That's a great horn name.
Bases Are Loaded horn section. Listener questions, because I got some other sports.
Yeah. Dale Cadeau's got two that I really like. If there's going to be a Stanley Cup parade in Toronto this July, who will be the Marc Gasol on the Maple Leafs?
Oh, that's a great question. I'm liking Muzzin. I'm feeling Muzzin because you got, okay, so what is the Gasol? Gasol is a vet.
Yep.
Gasol is a guy who contributed, but wasn't a superstar, but was an important piece.
Mm-hmm.
And also a guy that has a sort of, it could be Joe Thornton too.
Ooh. It's Joe Thornton. The answer is Joe Thornton. Muzzin won with the Kings. Joe Thornton, right. He checks every box. Yeah. He's fun-loving. He gets along with the young guys. He's never won at all. He once said that if he scored four goals, he'd whip his dick out when Thomas Hertl was going for four goals with the Sharks. If there's, like, put it this way, if the Leafs win the Stanley Cup, there's a good chance we're going to see Thornton's penis.
It's going to be the four-goal salute.
Yeah.
You're 100% right. I came to the conclusion myself, but it sounds like you are ready for bear on this one. Your explanation is great. It's going to be Thornton. And now I want them to win for so many reasons, plus one more to watch Joe. This is a great question, actually.
Yeah.
This is a great question. How is Marner and Matthews, what are they going to be like? Are they old enough to get it? They've been through a lot. They might get it now. Who's going to be the Kyle Lowry, the one who's holding the trophy? In this case, it'll be the Stanley Cup. And the smile is gigantic, and you just feel so good for them. Is it Matthews or is it Riley?
Neither. It's John Tavares. He's the captain. Good. The captain never won it all. He's the mature dad. He's going to be the one monitoring how much Matthews and Marner drinks. Tavares is going to be the one telling the guys, hey, boys, have some water. It's a marathon. It's not a sprint. You know he's going to be the one saying that.
The Argos came into the studio after they won the Grey Cup in, what was it, 2011? And they forced me to drink out of the Grey Cup and ruined my insides for years. So Tavares, protect those young men. Don't let them be victims of their excess.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
By the way, you're really good at this. Like, your picks are outstanding. Who else?
It's because it's related to drinking and having fun. Bob, this is my wheelhouse.
Yeah. See, this is relatable, though.
Yeah.
You are really good at this. You said Cadeau had a couple questions, Dale Cadeau.
Yeah, another one he threw out there. Optimistic or pessimistic that fans will be at Rogers Center, BMO, and the Stanley Cup Parade on July 15th?
Two ways to answer this. You go first and then I'll weigh in because you know a speech is coming.
Yeah. A parade, yes. It's, if we know anything, outdoors is far safer inside. And by July 15th, I feel like the vaccine will be given enough that we can have like 50% inside of arenas. So I'm just going to go with semi-optimism.
No chance. No chance. Do you remember I teased what did I do when I first woke up this morning?
Yes.
I went to the Toronto Star to get my headlines. And here were my headlines, Matt. The top three items that I read at 6:30 this morning. One, council recommends AstraZeneca vaccine not be used for 55s and under. Two, Canada just ordered 1.5 million doses of AstraZeneca. Three, Doug Ford will let us know by the end of the week if March break will be pushed back again. That's how I woke up. So basically the news was the vaccine is dodgy. We have lots of the dodgy vaccine and the kids might have to go to school all through April and March break might get pushed back again, becoming May break, I'm assuming. So no, I don't think by July 15th, we're going to have a 250,000 person parade. We can't even get five people into a McDonald's at the same time in this province.
First, you're raiding the Toronto Star. Bunch of Debbie Downers. I was watching Fox News. Everything's fine, Bob. Just you need to chillax. But the science says that being outside is okay.
Right? Yeah.
Science.
There's no way. Yeah, science, exactly. There was a poll that was attached to the article about March break that said, how do you respond to this? No, I don't want any more pushbacks. Yes, follow what the science says. Do you want to guess which one won?
Let's see. It's the Star, so it's probably the science one.
Nope. 83% said, I'm done with this.
Yeah. All right, everybody. I didn't hear about huge spikes during a lot of the protests. I didn't hear about, there wasn't any spikes after the Tampa Bay Buccaneers won the Super Bowl. So I don't know, maybe being outside is okay if everyone still wears a mask, if they're in close quarters. I don't know.
I don't know if there were huge spikes during the protests because of the protests, because there were huge spikes everywhere. So it's really, as much as people want to say it was this, it was that, it was the other thing, there was just rampant community spread everywhere. And I'm not a scientist, so I don't know enough about how things work or don't work. I do know this, though. They have shut down pretty much everything for a long time. So the idea that somehow the science works differently now than it did just because we're tired, I don't think that's the case. So, no, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Mr. Cadeau, to be the Debbie Downer Toronto Star reader, but I don't think there's any way. Now, here's the interesting thing. Could you stop people from coming? If there was a Facebook notification that said Friday at 12 o'clock, we're all going to Nathan Phillips Square and that thing took off, could you stop people from going? I don't think so.
If the Leafs won the Stanley Cup there's going to be some there's going to be some breaking of the rules.
See, this is the thing, Matt. If I'm John Torrey, do I want to, you know, it's like in skiing, they teach you how to lean into the fall. If you can control your fall as opposed to fight it, you're better off not getting injured. If you know people are going to go anyway, maybe you just throw an event because you have a better chance to police it. Mm-hmm. And you can get the cops properly prepared and you can get everybody properly. Like whatever it is you need to do, you have no chance of doing it if people go anyway. So you hear, we went from this is the worst crisis in Leafs history to planning the parade, which is so us.
Oh, but, well, hold on. Not us. We don't normally get into planning the parade sort of themes. That's not this show.
That's true. Although technically we are planning the parade.
Okay. At this technically, during this parade planning conversation that we are currently having, we may or may not be planning a parade. I can't disagree with you.
So I think actually I'm going to revoke my answer. I'm going to say, yeah, I agree with you, but not because it'll be okay, but because it'll be the lesser of two evils to plan something because you won't be able to stop people from doing it. That's right.
Yeah. Okay. I won't be anywhere near
through it. I feel good about this conclusion. I hope that satisfies you, Dale Cadeau. Any other listener questions?
I'll keep searching for some, but as I'm doing that, the Toronto Raptors.
Uh-huh.
When do we get to the point where we're secretly rooting for Anunoby and Siakam to score a combined 60 points in a 1-point loss?
I'm already there, Matt.
Yeah.
Already there. I thought that with Lowry coming back, I was convinced that he was gone. But when he came back, I thought, okay, well, they're not ready to completely shut it down. And if he plays well, you know, they could get into the play-in. But no, it was the Portland game. It was the Portland game that did it for me. I went into the Pistons game last night secretly hoping for a loss, which was painful. That's why I only watched about 8 minutes, because I hated the feeling. When Fred started jacking up shots from all over the place because the offense wasn't running right, I was like, yes, yes, keep it going, Freddie. But that's not a good feeling, so I'm going to avoid that from this point. Yeah, I think the answer is no. What about you?
I'm getting there. I absolutely am. And, you know, that loss to Detroit, just embarrassing. Listen, I know it's back-to-back. Every team deals with back-to-backs. Detroit's not a good team. Detroit led by, like, 8 after the first, 16 after the second, 17 after the third quarter. At one point, they had a 20-point lead. I don't care how tired you are. Detroit won with a lot of rookies and people you haven't heard of before. Like, that was just a bad loss. And then before that, they lost to Phoenix on Friday because they couldn't get a rebound near the end of the game. The Portland game, 74 points in the first half, 10 in the third quarter because they only did one thing, jack up 3-point shots. So, yeah, I'm now sort of at that point.
I was watching Pascal rack up the fouls yesterday, and I watched him get one against some Piston whose name I didn't recognize, but he was bigger than Pascal. And I thought, you know, he shouldn't be down there fighting like this. It's just not his game. You want him to play close to the basket because he's tall, but they just got no center. And there's no, at this point, we're better off getting a top six pick, a guaranteed top five, top six pick. Just start the losing, boys. It's a deep draft.
And this is, by the way, this is a new sensation. We haven't had this feeling in like 8-9 years.
Yeah. It reminded me of the Chris Bosch before they got kind of good phase, like that weird sort of post-Vince era where there was, but it's not like that because they didn't really have anybody on the team. Like Bosch wasn't a star yet. I know he kind of inherited the mantle, but there are stars on this team. Or people, at least we believe, are stars. Maybe we think they're stars just because we won with them. But no, Kyle's a star. Kyle's a legit star. It feels like they should be better. See, it's not like it used to be because we knew they sucked back then. This team feels like it should be better.
Oh, no. You're right about that. My point is this is the first time in ages we're not rooting for the team to win. Our eyes are on draft positioning, not playoff positioning. And that's something we haven't had. That dynamic, it's been a while since that dynamic's been around.
I have a theory why you said you're almost there, because I know you and I know what you're really saying. You're a very smart guy, and you're actually very logical and very practical. And you know it's the right thing to do to vote for losses, but I don't have to talk about this team, and you do.
Yeah.
And you have to keep an eye on them because you have to be conversant every day. And I have the luxury of watching here and there or just diving more into the Leafs and getting into the Jays. But you have to watch the Raptors so you're not ready to admit they stink. Because you have to go through the pain then, like we did when the Leafs sucked and we had to talk about them every day.
Ugh. Morgan Rielly, that guy looked good. No one else did, but Morgan Rielly did. It's 2014, everybody.
By the way, Galchenyuk, speaking of surprising players.
Yeah?
They're, you know what? They're so a feel-good story. Just don't blow the goaltending.
By the way, also, Bob, do you know why? Do you know why I don't want to get into the Raptors and the draft? Hmm. Then I don't know anything about these college basketball players. I know nothing. I'm not prepared to try to figure out who that power forward is on Baylor or something.
Yeah, I agree. It's not like years past. Football's still great for that because even if you're not watching college football obsessively, there's so much coverage. And there are still marquee games that you might watch. If a team has an 11-game season, you might catch two or three just to see a top prospect. And you don't have to follow the whole thing. And you can base your opinions accordingly. But these guys, like, how much Oklahoma State basketball did you watch this year?
No more than 14 games. No more than 14.
I felt like the bad GM who watches one game and makes a decision. I watched Cunningham in one game from start to back. And I thought, nah, he doesn't look like a good player to me.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe a little premature.
Well, we're all there because he wasn't great in the tournament, but he was great during the year. And now we're like, yeah, I don't know what the big deal with this guy is. It's so true. It's so true.
Yeah. Any more listener questions?
Buffalo Phil. Buffalo Phil sent in a visual one. It's a good one. It just says who wins, and in the middle it's the Naismith Cup, and then on one side it's the 97-98 Bulls. On the other side it's the fully healthy Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green. Golden State Warriors.
One of the truly great basketball hypotheticals. Do you want to take this one?
I've been staring at this, going back and forth over and over again. You see, I think Chicago was the... I don't know. Like, okay, I can make the argument. Chicago played in a time when there was fewer teams, so teams were harder to play against, you know, so the competition was higher. But then Golden State has three legitimate Hall of Famers and Draymond Green, but Michael Jordan's the greatest all time. Well, what about the three-point shot? But if you gave Jordan time, he would learn the three-point shot. I think I have to go to the Bulls. They win game 7 by a point.
Well, that is close. I think there's two answers to this.
Yeah, there is.
Well, exactly. Technically, there's two answers to it. But, I mean, there's two ways to approach this. There's the on paper, and then there's the what era are they playing in. So I'll go on paper first. Yeah. And if that's the case, I think it's the Warriors because of the matchups. Steph and Thompson give Pippen and Jordan all they can handle, and I think they can play themselves to a standoff. And then you've got Rodman and Draymond Green, and I think they play each other to a standoff, which means Durant. Like, they've just got the fourth weapon on Golden State. I don't think that the matchups are... They can play... Because Thompson's a great defensive player, too. You know, I'm not saying he's going to be Joe Dumars, but I think you can throw enough at Jordan to at least make sure he's not getting 40. And Scottie's one of the great all-round players in history. But there's just that extra depth, that fourth star, like... And a fourth legit star, like a fourth Hall of Famer. So I think it's Golden State for that. But if we play what era, I think Golden State wins if the Bulls are playing today. But I think the Bulls win if Golden State is playing in the 80s. Because I don't know that those guys could handle the physical beating. Like Steph Curry fighting through screens when you were allowed to set them with brass knuckles. I don't think his off-the-ball movement's going to be as clean.
Here's my pushback. First off, you get a Pippen guarding Durant. But if you took this Bulls team, put them in 2021, and you gave them, you know, a fair amount of time to acclimatize, just like you would give to Golden State if they went to 98. Well, how many points does Jordan get playing in an era where there is no defense? And he'll learn to shoot that three because he's a psycho, because someone will say, Jordan can't hit a three. And then he'll stab that person in the throat, bury the body, and then be back in time for a quick round of nine and then be at practice. But he'll learn to shoot that three. And you get Jordan in today's era and today's rules, he's getting 40 plus a game.
Matt, that's the stupidest thing you ever said. There's no way Jordan's playing only nine.
That, you know what? My bad. I'm sorry. After carefully burying the body and then, you know, murderously grinning at it, you'll get 18 in.
It's true. And the wild card in all of this is the competitive nature of Jordan and his ability to morph his game. But I will say, because you hate Kevin Durant, you can't give it to them, because this is the move that would make them the greatest team of all time and thereby justify historically Durant's move from OKC to Golden State. And I don't think you can do that. So I think you have an agenda. You're an activist.
That's the greatest team. No, that is that golden, like since the like 98 Bulls, since the, you know, 71 win Bulls team, the greatest team I've ever seen was that Golden State team with Durant.
Yeah. We could probably argue this forever, because not only does it get into matchups, but it also gets into styles. And maybe the most important person on the floor is Pippen, because as you say, if he can lock up Durant, then who takes Thompson at that point? See, Kukoc can't guard anybody.
Yeah.
This is the hole that I keep coming back to, is you've got a sieve on defense. And usually Rodman's enough to stop gap that, but you've got Draymond on the other side. Can you imagine the trash talk between Rock and Draymond Green? Can you imagine the cheating and ball punching and foot stepping and short yanking downing? It would be the cheating Super Bowl.
If I can go old man for like stereotypical old man for a second,
please.
Draymond Green and Dennis Rodman, the amount of trash talking would be at such a level that Kevin Durant would have to be put into a safe space, because that millennial would be triggered like nothing just hearing those two guys and just the abusive language they would throw at each other. Oh, that'd be dirty.
So, Matt, not that you have an agenda, but your final word on the statement is that Kevin Durant is a weak and soft millennial.
Yeah, that's right.
By the way, is Steve Nash coach of the year?
No.
Are we sure? It's got a weird team to coach.
I don't know.
Harden.
Yeah, but he also has
in another world, Harden's the MVP. I know it's going to be Jokic because people hate Harden, but that's a hell of a season. He's got a lot of weird pieces to fit together, and I think they're going to win the title, Matt.
Oh, I think they're going to. I think they're going to win the title as well. I think the moment that Kyle Lowry didn't end up in Philly or Miami, that kind of said to me, okay, the Nets, they got the East.
Yeah. Oh, I see. You're talking about just the East. I think the Lakers are really going to regret this. I think they have, if everybody's health is okay, I still think they're the team coming out of the West, but I don't think they can beat the Nets. They would have needed Lowry. I think they're going to regret it.
Yeah.
For what? For like a young prospect, you're going to deny LeBron a shot at five? Stupid. They'll regret it. Any more listener questions before we sign off? We've only got a few. I got one question.
No, that's good. That's good. Okay. Okay. Go.
Kong versus Godzilla is coming out soon. One, are you going to watch it? Two, who would win in your world, Kong or Godzilla?
Okay. Yes, I will watch it, and I'll hate watch it. I won't like it. They've never done a good Godzilla movie. It just hasn't happened. I blame Matthew Broderick for that. Mm-hmm. Who would win? I feel that. On paper, Godzilla definitely has the advantage, but I'm going to give it to the grit and heart of King Kong finding a way to get it done.
I worry about Kong's defense, but I like his speed.
Yeah.
Godzilla feels to me like the Dallas Stars team that won with Sergei Zubov and Hatcher and Medano, like they're just big. And but Kong is speedy. He's a speedy forward. I like Godzilla because I think Kong will get in his shots, but they won't be enough to put him out. And then just one blast of fire. Like, how does Kong defend the fire blast? Wouldn't his hair burn?
It's super hard skin. He doesn't have regular, you know, regular monkey skin. He's got super tough skin.
And also, venue is a big thing. Is there a place where Kong can use his environment to his advantage?
Yeah.
Are they just in a field?
Absolutely. If they were on a true fight island, and Dana White would book this fight and would pack it, wouldn't care about masks. But if this was in the octagon, Godzilla wins this in a heartbeat. I feel this is more urban. This is going to spill over. At one moment, you're going to be, you know, in a metropolitan area. The next moment, somehow you're going to be in a jungle. So I'm giving Kong the advantage.
I see Kong's style as a kind of a stick and move.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I think Godzilla has kind of got the haymaker. He's looking to land the big shots. I think you just got to tag him once, though. You know, it's like watching the heavyweights in the fights. You know, you just got to get one good one. A heavyweight fight can change in one punch. There's so much force. I think emotionally, though, I would root for Kong. Kong's my second favorite movie monster. But geez, Godzilla's a tough matchup. You know, styles make fights. That's a tough one.
It is. Styles make fights. I think of King Kong, but he's got the defense. He's like Floyd Mayweather Jr., except for King Kong actually respects women. So I'm going to give it. I'm going to give it to King Kong. Who's your number one monster? Movie monster? Wait. It's going to be Dracula. Oh, it's Frankenstein.
I love Frankenstein. I love the story. I love the backstory. I love the literary backstory. I love all of it. We actually have a picture of Frankenstein, the Boris Karloff one, black and white, in our lobby. Well, it's not a lobby. I guess it's a foyer. What is it that houses have? Front entrance?
Foyer, Bob.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, it's certainly not a lobby. I haven't done that well in radio.
By the way, Bob, how relatable is this? Why do you love that monster? Because of the literary background, and we have Boris Karloff in our foyer. You elitist.
Mm-hmm. I like Frankenstein. Frankenstein's misunderstood. I do think Dracula is a great monster, but there's a kind of a tendency to overplay him. Gary Oldman, I can't decide whether Gary Oldman's Dracula is awesome or terrible.
Ah, he was awesome. And that movie, I mean, we're out of time now, but that movie... That was an overly sexualized movie. Francis Ford Coppola, you horny son of a bitch. and that's how we end the 200th episode of it. Bob, always a pleasure. Love doing the podcast. Always one of my favorite parts of the week. Just chatting with you. We always laugh. It's always fun. It already reinvigorates the brain. And thank you to everyone who listens. Remember to tell people, tell your friends, subscribe and review whatever the hell it is that people do with podcasts. But love it, Bob. Love doing it with you. I love you.
I love you too, Matt. I think that you, when you do your episode recap that you put into the little write-up for Twitter, it should just say, all it should say is just Francis Ford Coppola, you horny son of a bitch.
Done.
Bye, Matt.
Bye, Bob.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.